Like this show and want to make your own? Let me tell you about Anchor. It's free, and they have creation tools that allow you to record and edit your podcast right from your phone or computer. And now you can even add any song from Spotify directly to your episodes. The possibilities are endless for what you can create, whether it's music analysis, your own radio show, or something the world's never heard before. Anchor will distribute your podcast for you so it can be heard on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and many more. And you can also make money from your podcast with no minimum listenership. It's everything you need to make a podcast in one place. So download the free Anchor app or go to anchor.fm to get started.
Hi, I'm Nicole.
Sarah.
Hillary.
And we're the hosts of the Feminine Mistake podcast.
Each month we sit down with a guest to watch movies that are 20 years or older.
And see how they hold up to today's modern feminist lens.
Why do mermaids have such low self-esteem?
Why is it so funny when men take care of babies?
What exactly did Jenny die of in Love Story?
These are the kind of hard questions we ask ourselves on the Feminine Mistake podcast. The Feminine Mistake podcast. Now available on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, and Podbean. Do you guys think that was okay?
Yeah, I don't know. We sounded kind of shrill.
Really?
Yeah, women's voices are just so grating on the radio.
Yeah.
Oh, man, you're right.
Yeah, I mean, have you ever heard those guys over at the Nerdist or Last Podcast on the Left? I mean, they are just biologically more funny than we are.
So true.
Yeah.
Welcome to the Vocal Fries Podcast, the podcast about linguistic discrimination.
I'm Carrie Gillen.
And I'm Megan Figueroa.
So today we have a guest to talk about foreign accents and how we discriminate against them.
Yes.
So that's exciting.
And super relevant always.
Always.
Yeah. I feel like there's always a news article that's about someone being an asshole about how... foreign accents or accents they perceive to be foreign, but
yeah. That's a good one.
Yeah, but we do have some adorable news. Well, I don't know if I call it news, but we had the most awesome shout out from a podcast called How to Make a Memory with Jennifer Tierney. I was delighted when I heard it.
Yeah, me too. That's very sweet.
Yeah. And I totally understand the feeling of wanting to be, she mentioned wanting to be internet friends, and I totally get it. It's like, there are people I'm like, I want to be, like with my favorite murder ladies, I'm like, I want to be internet friends. Let's be friends. So it was like super sweet to hear someone say that about us. And
yeah.
Yeah. So...
So hi, internet friend.
Yay, internet friends.
Yeah, and how I found out even that she even talked about us was through, her podcast has just joined, I think it's called The Legend Podcast Network, run by Matt Mitchell and from Geek and Warriors. And I just had a conversation with him yesterday, and he pointed out something about our discussion about literally and all those words, but he was talking about irregardless and how apparently, I did not know this, I don't have this stereotype, but stereotypically people associate irregardless with Latino people and culture. And so maybe that is why that woman who wrote the 15 words you should get rid of from your vocabulary or however many it was, why she ended her post with jefe.
And I think it was specifically about irregardless, was it not?
Probably.
Yeah, yeah.
I've already forgotten, so let's say yes.
Yes. Yes, let's just make it worse on her. But
yeah, so that's why she used it, because she was, like, primed by this.
Yeah. And, I mean, I feel like when you write something that's, like, eventually edited, maybe you take out the things that are super racist that you were primed to write. Like, that is not... I mean... Again, this is only speculation, but from, like, you know, other evidence that we're drawing upon. But it's like, that's not cool, lady. That's way more offensive than I thought. Like, I was thinking, I was already offended because I was like, there's something wrong here.
Yeah.
But if that's what she's picking up on.
Yeah, because it didn't make sense. Like, if she was using it the literal Spanish way, like, why are you calling your reader's boss? Like, that doesn't make any sense.
Right.
And if you're using it in this sort of more casual English way, which I don't really understand what it really means in English, but let's whatever. It still didn't feel right. Something felt wrong, but then I was like, well, maybe there's a real legitimate reason to use it. But no, I think you're right. I think it was racist / ethnicist.
Yeah, and we Googled. Because, you know, that's how you find... Oh, no. Okay, so listen. Before I say... so I looked it up. Yep, 15 words you need to eliminate. She definitely says jefe under number 15, irregardless. This doesn't mean when you think it means jefe. Oh, shit. That's right. So racist. Oh, great. Or ethnicist. That's fantastic. All right.
No. Yeah. That's no, gross. He was absolutely right. So that's thank gross. You, Matt.
Yeah, thank you.
For letting us know, because I really didn't know.
Yeah.
And I feel like... I should have known, but for some reason, this is just not a stereotype that I have, like, at all.
Well, I feel like I super should have known. but since we didn't, we Googled it, and we found the Miami New Times has, like, a little primer on Miami slang, and it has irregardless in there.
Mm-hmm.
So
they claim that it's Miami for regardless, which is silly because it's way bigger than that. But it does tell us something about how it's perceived.
Yeah, especially since it, you know, this article seems to be related to Spanish.
Yes.
Know, at least influenced by Spanish speakers or influenced by people in that community.
Yeah.
And they also have, I wanted to point out, literally... and they say, like millennials everywhere, young Miamians are prone to overuse and misuse the word literally. So but it literally might be more ubiquitous.
Ubiquitous.
It's just not a word I ever say, Carrie.
I know. I'm sorry. It was just so cute. And I would have done the same thing.
it might be more ubiquitous here than anywhere else. Yeah. It's not. Probably. I mean, yeah. So there, again, is this kind of ageist assumption that literally is just overused by young people. And again, misuse, overuse. Hashtag.
I can't
get over it.
I can't wait for the next generation to get picked on because it's going to be all the same stuff. Every single thing.
Yep. I know. I mean, I guess I'm going to be the generation that's going to be picking on since I'm a millennial. But, you know, I...
Just remember how picked on you were. So for some reason, Gen X forgot how much we were picked on. Yep. Like, we were the slacker generation, you know? So there's all this, like, how lazy we were, all that stuff. And
now you're
none of that
lazy.
Turned out to be true. Yeah. Anyway. I mean, generations... First of all, generations are... completely socially constructed. Like there's nothing there at all, right? It's just like, oh, we're just gonna carve up humanity into these slices. But even setting that aside, just pretending that it's real, like the generalizations made are almost always the same from the next one to the next, and it's always bad. Those young people, wow, do they really suck today?
Yeah. I mean so
sing a different tune.
Yes. It's getting boring. I'm bored with your hatred.
So it is very boring.
Yeah. All right. So that Tom article is worse than we thought. Fantastic. Okay.
Yes.
That's the moral of that story.
If you think it's probably a little racist or ethicist or somethingist, it probably is.
Yeah.
It probably is. Sometimes it isn't. And I do want to make sure that we, like, you know, at least give the benefit of the doubt until we have evidence. But, like, just in the back of your head, file it away of, make me uncomfortable.
Yeah. And why does that make me uncomfortable? Sit with that and question it, because there's, you know, we could all do that a little bit more. I don't want to be like, I want you to feel uncomfortable, but also, like, that's where growth is, so.
Yeah, no, uncomfortable is good. I mean, you can't do it 24/7. Like, you do need to have your comfortable time where you're in your pajamas and not doing anything, but,
right.
Like,
yeah.
You do need to be discomforted sometimes.
Yeah.
So.
So. All right.
And then one more thing. We don't know what we're going to be doing yet, but we are going to be at Phoenix Comic Fest, formerly known as Phoenix.
Ubiquitous.
Exactly. Comes back to bite you. Phoenix Comic Con, which they no longer could call it Comic Con because of the San Diego Comic Con. But anyway.
Yeah. They were like, we want it. We started it. You can't have it.
So they sued Denver, and they won.
Yeah.
But before they even won, Phoenix decided,
let's not deal
fighting.
With that. Yeah.
So they changed it to Comic Fest. So hopefully we'll be doing something around linguistic discrimination, but we don't know yet.
Yep.
But we'll let you know.
I know. So, you know, that's exciting. I'm really excited.
Yeah, me too.
This is peak nerd. For me.
Yeah, I've already done it. And the one that was probably the nerdiest was the constructed languages one.
Yeah.
So no matter what we do, it won't be as nerdy as that.
Yeah. Okay. Well, you know. You're just trying to take it away from me. Thanks a lot. You're like...
No, I'm just saying I'm nerdier, I guess, which is not necessarily a good thing.
Yeah. Well, you are. That's true. You are nerdier.
That's true. It's not a judgment.
You can say. I can't help it that I was born so cool.
Yeah.
Well, maybe on that note.
Yeah.
Shall we?
So now we will be talking with Ethan Kutlu of the University of Florida about foreign accents and the discrimination against people who have one.
Yay!
Okay, so today we have another guest. Ethan Kutlu is a PhD student at the University of Florida. He works on bilingualism, sociophonetics, and cognitive science. He's trying to understand the differences between first and second language acquisition. And probably more importantly for what we're going to be talking about today, he's currently a member of the team investigating factors impacting native speakers' foreign accented speech judgments. So welcome, Ethan.
Hi. Hi, Carrie. Hi, Megan. And hi, everyone.
Oh.
Thanks for being on the show.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Of course.
Oh, so you're in Florida right now.
Yeah, I'm in Florida, Gainesville, Florida. Exactly.
Yeah, I've actually heard a lot of good things about Gainesville.
Yeah, Gainesville is an excellent city.
Yeah.
I'm enjoying it a lot.
Oh, that's good.
Cool.
Awesome. Is this, so did you do your master's before you started your PhD?
Yes, I did my master's in Canada in cognitive sciences.
Oh, okay. So I was wondering, this is the first time in the U.S. for the PhD?
Yeah, that's my first. Yeah, I mean, I'm here for the last 3 years, but before that, I haven't been to U.S. Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah, so actually, I met Ethan.
Yeah.
Through my friend Solvega Armoskaiti, who was at the same university, right? Yeah,
yes.
You guys were at the same university, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
In Canada.
Yeah, she was in Ottawa. Yeah, they were in Ottawa together. Yeah.
Okay, cool.
Okay, so let's begin with what we're actually here to talk about, which is foreign accented speech.
Yes.
I mean, I feel like it's always, I was going to say, I feel like it's like in the forefront of media, but it's always important. There's always something about foreign accented speech.
Uh-huh.
Because people are always being assholes.
Well, to most foreign accents, I guess, not all. Because, you know, British accents are not really discriminated against in the U.S.
Right. That's true.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah, that's actually what I'm working on. Because so what we have right now is that people, when they say that, oh, this person sounds accented, it might... Mm-hmm. Go both ways, actually, because it might sound like, oh, they have a prestigious accent, so they might be from a country that has prestige over other countries, or, oh, this person has accent, so I'm not going to even pay attention because they're not from here. So that's a very crucial information for especially our society right now.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And so I guess we should just start as if Megan knows nothing. And just And just what is an accent?
Yeah, so that's an excellent question, because and from scientific point of view, there's no answer for that right now. Believe it or not, it's a very complex terminology that people just throw it in a bunch of different scenarios, but they don't know why they're using that term. So the way in the past when people use accentedness was related to kind of intelligibility. So intelligibility is a phonetic measure, and it's actually an objective measure that we can ask people how they perceive certain sounds or certain words or certain sentences, and we want them either to pronounce it out loud or we want them to type it. And from their errors, we can actually count how much they understood from that utterance. So that's the objective measure. But when it comes to accentedness, it's very subjective. It's how you feel about certain sounds or certain people and how they speak. And in the past, as I mentioned, it was related to somehow intelligibility, but right now we have studies suggesting that we can actually understand certain populations very well with no problems in terms of speech perception, but we still love to label those populations as, oh, it's very accented. So it's the terminology itself is actually evolving as the societies are evolving and languages are evolving. And it's hard to keep up with it because it's changing from populations to populations, from countries to countries. And we use it every day, almost.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I've never actually thought about how how to define an accent changes from population to population, how we all have, we kind of all have our own definition of what an accent is. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And every person has their own accent. So if you, for instance, while you're listening to me, you might hear certain, because English is my third language. I was not even exposed to English until the age of 15. Mm-hmm. And when I was exposed to that, I was back in Turkey, and I heard it from Turkish people who acquired English as a second language. Mm-hmm. So I never heard the difference between, for instance, an interdental sound like th and a t sound. So for me back then, they were the same sounds. And when I moved to Canada, all of a sudden I was like, oh, okay, there's this interdental sound, either Canadians pronounce different things differently, or I have no idea about English, and then I had to acquire that sound. So you might hear some certain Turkish features coming out right now when I'm speaking, but I also have that Canadian raisings for my vowels in certain contexts. But I now also have the Southern English, so I might also throw in certain Southern accent. So it makes me unique in a way that I have these three combinations of from different geographical places, and you can actually trace that back to the origin. So that's what is fascinating about accents.
And I'm thinking about, even within you, you're saying how you have this the Canadian influence and then the Southern influence now. I'm thinking about hierarchy of accents and how we've talked about Southern mm-hmm. English on this show. Southern English is completely disparaged in the U.S.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And again, that goes to the side of prestige, because in United States, at least, Southern English is not considered as a prestigious accent. Southern people are most of the times considered as uneducated, or they don't pay attention to how they speak. But we know that it's not true, because you can be very well educated but have Southern accent. Mm-hmm. And if you compare that to United Kingdom, for instance, how we look at England and how we look at Queen's English, which is known also as RP, received pronunciation, Queen speaks with a Southern accent, but in United Kingdom, South refers to the best part of the country. So sometimes the geographical parts of how language interacts with geography and how that interacts with socioeconomic status is also very amazing.
And also, Canadian raising is mocked in the United States too.
Yeah, exactly.
So you're getting mocked from all directions.
Yep. Yep. That's my life.
So are some people better at understanding foreign accents?
Yeah, so that's actually what I'm working on for my dissertation, because there's evidence suggesting that if you are exposed to different types of languages or different types of accents, you're actually better at understanding, again, people from a foreign accent or even a dialectal differences. but you will have to be exposed to a bunch of different varieties within the language, and that will kind of feed your how you access those words in your own brain, because what we do in our brain is that we collect that data and we separate them into segments and super segments, and the more you have exposure to different varieties, mm-hmm. you're actually expanding your kind of dictionary in the brain that helps you to access to those the lexicon. So I can easily say that having exposure to a bunch of different varieties is actually very beneficial, and we observe that especially in bilinguals, that they are very quick at accessing different information constantly.
Another thing that bilinguals are better at.
Yep, exactly.
Or bilingualism is better.
Multilingualism.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Is this,
yes.
Oh,
I was just going to say that this makes... I was watching The Great British Baking Show with my friend, and I was like...
Oh, yeah.
Having trouble understanding some of them. And she was just like, just wait. Once you start binging this, you're going to get better at understanding them. And it's true. I'm getting a little bit better each time. So that totally makes sense to me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because that's the when you're exposed to a certain dialect or accent at the first time, that's the intelligibility part, because you're not expecting to hear certain variants of sounds. So you're kind of surprised, or you're trying to make sense of what's happening, because it's a different way of speaking the same language, right? So what happens is that with exposure, your brain actually collects that data, and it kind of categorize sounds in a way that, oh, okay, this should go with this sound and this should go with these sounds. And then you try to come up with, okay, yeah, now I understand. There's no issue with understanding.
I'm seeing your cognitive science background. I love it.
Yeah, it surfaces in my life a lot. I can't stop that.
Nor should you.
Yeah.
So you actually mentioned earlier that English is your third language. I'm assuming your first language is Turkish?
Yes.
And what's your second language?
I acquired French before English.
Ah, so, okay.
Yeah. But if you ask me whether I can speak French right now, that is not the case. I can understand it, but because I haven't been speaking for a long time, I think I lost the production.
Mm.
But I think I maintain the comprehension part. And it's very bad. It's terrible. I don't know why it happened, but it's on me. I think I focused on English a lot and just kind of postponed French for a little while.
Yeah. It's hard when you're not speaking a particular language. You don't have the practice. So yeah, my French is gone. Mm-hmm. Whatever I had before. I mean, I do understand some of it, not as much as I used to, but production, it's not great.
So I'm thinking about how, okay, y'all are talking about second languages, third languages you speak. I feel like for some people, they're kind of intimidated by learning another language because they're afraid of sounding accented or having an accent.
That's the biggest issue in bilingualism and multilingualism, especially in the Northern American context right now. Because when we look at European countries, being a bilingual or multilingual is actually the standard. Mm-hmm. So you have to maintain a bunch of different languages, and people don't make fun of your accent, or they don't label you, oh, you don't sound as someone from Belgium. Mm-hmm. You know, you don't hear those. People generally say, oh, you speak Belgian French, for instance. Mm-hmm. But when it comes to the United States, we actually have, again, studies looking at immigrant populations or people who came here a long time ago, and their children right now are actually showing a lot of depression patterns because they feel that they're singled out, they're left out in their communities or at school, mm-hmm. especially in the school environment, so at the education level, because their friends or peers call them as, oh, you sound weird or you sound different than us. So that us versus them distinction happens a lot when you speak more than one language. And it's such a shame because, again, a lot of bilingual studies are suggesting that bilingual population is actually very kind of unique in a way that you know when to use which language. Because sometimes those people use both languages at the same time, which we call as the code switching context, that they know that the population actually understand both languages at the same time, so they maintain both languages. But in another context, they might say, oh, no, this is specific to English-speaking context, so I should maintain English and, for instance, stop my French coming out. So they have that control ability of two languages. And it's amazing because it's training, lifelong training. And when you hear that, oh, but these people are kind of left out because they sound different, it's just heartbreaking because that's going to be our future. Those kids will be growing up, feeling left out and questioning themselves. And that also leads to another problem about identity.
Right.
A lot of bilingual kids want to leave one of their identities just to sound perfectly American or sound perfectly, I don't know, like Southern American English, mm-hmm. because they cannot maintain it because their communities don't allow them to maintain both. That's a huge problem.
I guess I'm the only American here, so let me just say what the problem, the biggest problem with America, one of them is,
I was gonna say, wait,
one
what?
Of them, sorry.
Yeah,
one of the biggest problems with America is this us versus them mentality. Them.
Yeah,
it's horrifying, mm-hmm. to me. It's disgusting. And you said it, accented speech or people that are kids that are, you know, grew up speaking Spanish and they try to get rid of Spanish because, you know, they want to fit in, mm-hmm. when they go to English speaking schools.
Yeah.
This is horrible that we're doing this to kids, and it's totally the us versus them thing. They want to be an, mm-hmm. us, right? Like, that's what it's survival.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's absolutely just heartbreaking, and we really need to fix it.
Yeah.
America needs to fix, exactly. a lot of things.
Because there'll be a lot of power coming from understanding different populations and how we can make everything, instead of looking at separate groups as out groups, mm-hmm. Maintaining an in-group mentality, because then we can actually advance, because from all our individual uniqueness we can form a better society,
right?
I think it's kind of a utopia, but still I think we should work on that.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah.
I mean, it's true that you're never going to get a perfect society, because that's just, mm-hmm. not how humans are, but we can make things better. And one,
exactly.
way we can,
yeah.
make it better is to be more accepting of other people and other ways of talking.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, the first step is realizing how we are othering people so much by the way we speak, or how we're judging people by the way we speak.
Mm-hmm.
It's,
yeah.
Yeah, I think the first step is acknowledging it. It,
yeah.
really, mm-hmm. is.
Yeah, and some evolutionary linguists actually assume that it kind of, accentedness at least is evolved with our own evolutionary path, that it was kind of an alert system for, mm. us to, oh, this person is not from our group, this person is not from our community. So we got very sensitive to certain phonological or phonetic differences or variants that we can detect that single feature not being from that from our community. Mm. So we can easily say, oh, this person is from outside, this is an outsider. But in time we take that alert system to an extreme level of leaving people out and labeling them and causing them depression. It's the unfortunate way of using our evolutionary path to make sense of the world. Because when you look at it could make sense that, okay, yeah, I understand the difference, that it sounds different, that person might be an outsider. But it doesn't mean that person is less of a human or less of my own kind.
Right.
That's the part that's killing us.
Right.
Because we don't do it when Queen Elizabeth speaks RP. We don't do that when someone with a slight French flavored English speaks to us, because we love those kind of other accents that are prestigious. We love to hear them. And people, again, studies suggest that when people have that European sounding, Americans actually love that and they fall in love easily. So it's not always a threat for us. But when we hear, for instance, someone speaking with an Indian English in the United States, or with with features of Asian languages, then we kind of stop and it's like, okay, no, I cannot accept it. I cannot even understand it. I cannot even listen to this. And it surfaces a lot in institutions like universities, because in the United States, a lot of the graduate students are international students. Mm-hmm. And a lot of these students have fellowships that requires them to teach or to interact with undergraduate students. So on that side, for instance, I'm very lucky because at University of Florida, we don't have the same policies, and especially in my department, I'm very lucky because I'm an international student and I've never been treated like that. But I also know cases in the United States where certain international students were kind of banned from teaching because undergraduate students did not like their accents. Mm-hmm. And that's a terrible thing, yep. Because you come to a country to have education, but then people say that, oh, I don't understand you, so you cannot teach me.
Another problem with student evaluations, by the way.
I've seen
horror stories about student evaluations where students just totally shit on people's way of speaking, mm-hmm. and their accents. It's terrible.
Yeah. Yeah, we actually, Carrie, I think you guys shared that on Vocal Fry is about the Canadian incident where one lecturer was labeled as being accented and students hated her on Write My Prof, I think. Yep. Yeah, so those stories are always emerging because students don't appreciate the varieties or students don't appreciate accents. They just look at it from a perspective that, okay, this person is... it sounds different and they look kind of different from what we look, so I'm just gonna go ahead and not listen to that person.
Well, I think that's important too, they look different than we look, because as Carrie said at the beginning, British accents were like, ooh, or like Australian, like, oh, it's very, I've heard like, oh, it's very sexy, you know, like people will actually think it's an advantage, but these people are mostly white, right? When we talk about
exactly. Yeah. So there's that part of accent is going with race and ethnicity, mm-hmm. because if you belong to a race or an ethnic group that's totally different from the context that we're looking at, and if you have slight deviations of your with the language at the language level, then you are more likely to be judged heavily in terms of your accent. Whereas if you're following under being white and being in countries that are kind of close to the United States, then you'll be probably, you're likely to be judged as, oh, it's a prestigious accent. They're from Britain or they're from Australia. They're good people. Mm-hmm.
So this is why I'm a little bit suspicious of the evolutionary claim, because we only use these differences against other people when it kind of suits other agendas. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, maybe we were evolutionarily not designed exactly, but pushed to hear differences, but like we only use it in a bad way when it suits us. So,
yeah. Yeah. So exactly. So at that level, it really interacts with the political situation all around the world, because we take that evolutionary path in a way that, oh, I'm going to use it for my purposes, because if it serves me, then I'm fine. But if it doesn't, then I'm going to just keep labeling other people. It's definitely, it goes really well with political situation and geographical situation right now in the world. Definitely. Yeah.
Okay. So what I'm hearing is that some of the accents that are the most judged, and I agree with this, so let me know if I'm getting this wrong, but mainly Asian accents are treated as the worst. Is that right?
I would say Asian and South Asian. So if you're looking at any type of societies that are falling under that East Asia or South Asia, they will be judged heavily as a heavily accented.
Yeah, from my own personal experience, I would definitely say that that's true. I remember when I first got to university as an undergrad, one of my professors was, I think, Korean, certainly East Asian anyway, and many of the other students were just like, I can't understand him at all. And I was like, he did speak fast, and it was math, so it was very difficult, but I didn't think that the intelligibility was as bad as many of the other students said. Yeah, so I definitely noticed the racism back then.
Yeah. Yeah, and right now, again, because universities are also changing in a way that, oh, we have to kind of have this as a marketing issue that, oh, we have all lecturers speaking in the best way possible because all our students will benefit from that. And we maintain the idea, and unfortunately, that's affecting a lot of graduate students and also lecturers and even tenure track position faculty members as well, because if one student says, oh no, I couldn't understand this person because they have accent, then it's probably the ending for that person, which is just terrible.
Yeah, agreed. I actually was on not a committee. Every once in a while, I would be asked to come in and judge people's ability to be TAs. And one of the mm-hmm. criteria was really like, how intelligible are they? And it was very unsettling, but I was really trying to make sure that, yes, actually this person is not being a good teacher, as opposed to only being slightly accented. Because there were a couple of times uh-huh. when the other judges on the panel would be like, oh, I just didn't understand them at all. And I was like, no.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
They were fine.
Uh-huh. Yeah, that's another issue, especially that's one application. But when we look at linguistic studies, we also see that emerging a lot in the data that we are collecting right now, because most of linguistic research is focusing on native speaker judgments and how native speakers judge certain linguistic phenomena. But then we see variation even within the United States, that there are differences, grammatical differences in Southern accents and in Southern dialects, I would say, and Northern dialects, and West and East Coast are different. So when we look at, again, linguistic studies just focusing on one single population and targeting them as standard, and that's how, we're not saying that it's not how people speak or should speak, but we're actually implicitly saying that, because we're only collecting data from monolingual speakers or native speakers. I mean, thankfully that changed a little bit in the last couple of years, but still we're not doing a lot of progress in terms of having varieties in our own research.
That's true.
Yeah.
I'm curious to know what the situation is like in Turkey. Is there any sort of similar judgment against regional uh-huh. dialects or foreign accents or anything like that?
Uh-huh. Yeah. Oh, yeah. It happens again, probably all around the world, because in Turkey, especially. Okay, so Turkey is a maze. So there are a bunch of different ethnic groups. Peacefully, I think, lived in the same area for a long time, and then they lost their peace, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. But we also have a lot of outsiders who moved to Turkey back in time, and they just wanted to stay there because of the nature of other opportunities. But when we look at the populations, if you're from the western part of the world, you're judge as being more polite, more educated, you sound better. Whereas within Turkey, if you speak slightly with Anatolian dialects, which is the kind of central part of Turkey, you're not educated. People should not listen to you because probably you're not an urban citizen, but you're a rural citizen. And it surfaces a lot in the southern part of Turkey, where we have the border with other Middle Eastern countries, and where we see a lot of Kurdish-Turkish bilingualism. So that was, back in time, it was a huge problem, because Turkey's constitution did not allow people to speak other languages after the republic was formed. And there were reasons behind that. One reason was to form a unified country and taking extreme precautions towards separating a bunch of different ethnic groups. But then in time, it created a lot of stress on people, because then we didn't let people speak their own mother tongue. And then that created that harsh environment for both Turkish people and people who live in the border and identify themselves as Kurdish or half Kurdish, half Turkish. Recently, we have implemented the new constitution saying that people can speak Kurdish. And in some schools, they start, they can actually maintain their Kurdish. They can take Kurdish classes. But at the government level, we still don't have enough support. I think they're still working on that. Honestly, I don't get updates much from Turkey as much as I did in the past. But I think they're still working on maintaining at least Kurdish as one language in the southern part. But then there are other dialects. We have the Black Sea region dialect, which has a lot of features from Russian and eastern parts of Turkey. So they have a bunch of different dialects in there, and we don't maintain those, and they're dying. So mm-hmm. That's really unfortunate, because again, we singled out those individuals that, oh, you're from Black Sea region, you probably are not educated, you're just probably working in a farm collecting tea, and you're not a good person. So those things also happen in Turkey, even back when I was there. And I'm pretty sure it's still happening.
It's always the same bullshit.
Yeah, I mean, exactly.
What's wrong with picking tea? I drink tea every goddamn day. It's the best.
Yeah. Yeah, and that region is almost providing 95% of the entire country's tea consumption. Mm. It's coming from there. So, and Turkish people love tea, so we should treat them better.
Exactly. We should respect the people that feed us, and well, I guess in this case it's not really feeding, but still, like, comforts us, nourishes us.
Right.
Exactly, yeah.
Stop being assholes, people.
Yes.
I mean, in some ways it makes me feel better that everybody, that this is just a common thing about humans. Mm-hmm. But in another way, it makes me feel worse, because then I'm like, can we ever fix this? Right. I think we can get better, you know, baby steps, we can get better. But
I mean,
it's
that's
still upsetting.
Yeah. That's why we have the podcast, right? We're hoping that there is some room for growth.
Yeah, exactly. We're not just tilting at windmills, I hope.
Yeah. But I get what you're saying, that you're happy, or not happy, but you're glad to know, you're kind of glad to know that it's not just us that are
assholes.
I mean,
I knew that, but
but
it's amazing how this urban-rural divide is just so common. Uh-huh. So common.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, again, we started doing that back in time sometime, and then we start labeling people for being hardworking and for feeding other people. And that's why we're losing our farms today.
Yeah.
And that's why we're losing everything, because those people stopped doing that after a long time of being treated as, oh, you're not a good citizen. You're just a person who's working for us.
So are there any other questions, Megan?
I guess I would ask, as a takeaway for our listeners, Ethan, why is judging foreign accents so shitty? Like, if you decide, like, one takeaway, if our listeners, if someone asked them tomorrow, why is it so shitty to judge people on their accents, what would you want them to say?
It's gonna, so what goes around comes back around. if we judge people right now with their accents, one day another future population might judge us for our own American English, maybe. Mm-hmm. So we shouldn't do that. We should teach the world that everyone has accents, and it's unique, and it's what makes us perfect, and it's what makes us human, that we maintain that uniqueness about our conversations. Mm-hmm. And we should just appreciate it instead of singling out people. It's that one thing that we carry. I have a great I had the opportunity to work with Caroline Wilshire, who works on word Englishes and Indian Englishes. Mm-hmm. And she gave this example from other scholars that she heard back in time. And she said, accents are kind of like viruses, but they don't damage us. We just carry them to places and we just implement them. And from that, we grow new things. And it's one thing that we take with languages that everyone carries without knowing it. And then we share it with other people, and then other people share it with other people, and it just grows like that. So we should just stop for a second and listen to people with both of our ears fully kind of engaging in a conversation and understand them, and try to understand, for instance, their background, why they're here, and we should appreciate that.
Oh my goodness.
It's very sweet.
I love it. I never thought I'd get, like, glistening-eyed over a virus analogy, but here I am. I love it.
Yeah.
Well, we carry virus RNA in our DNA, I believe. Like, they're just a part of us, so they're not always bad.
Yeah. Some viruses are actually for us to connect with each other.
I love it. Yeah. I love it.
Me too.
Wow. Thank you so much, Ethan.
Thank you. Yeah. Thank you for having such a great platform for related to linguistics, first of all, because I teach introduction to linguistics, and I keep telling my students to listen to your podcast, and some of them are listening to you, and sometimes after class they come and talk to me about the podcast, and we're just having this great conversation. So thank you very much for making linguistics great.
Thank you so much. Yeah. That makes me very happy. It's exactly what I wanted. You know.
Yeah, I really think we needed something like this in linguistics, because linguistics is not a new field, but it was kind of getting into this weird notion of, oh, we're scientific and we have to exclude everything, but then we are trying to be inclusive, but then we stopped doing that. We were not inclusive, and you guys are including both linguists and non-linguist people and trying to educate public, so which I think we should all do in linguistics and in other fields.
I mean other fields do a better job, I think, of communicating. Not all fields, but many fields do a better job of communicating what they're doing. Like, there's like famous physicists and famous biologists talking about their field, but there's not that many linguists who talk about linguistics to the public. A few, but not enough.
And language is, I mean, language is the most human thing, right? And a lot of linguists, I'm gonna say it, forget about the person. Forget about the human when they study language. And I think it's important that we don't forget that this is a very human thing that we're looking at.
Yeah, perhaps the most human thing. Because remember, back in the day, there were all these things that humans were supposed to be unique for, like having tools and all these other things. And all of those things have been knocked down. And the only thing that really remains is language.
Yeah, crows were like, bitches.
Hold my beer.
Yeah, exactly. Give me that goddamn stick.
I love crows, by the way.
They're amazing.
Okay, well, again, thank you so much. And we will always leave our listeners with one final word, which is, don't be an asshole.
Don't be an asshole.
Yeah, don't be an asshole, people.
Thanks.
Yeah, thank you very much, guys. Thank you.
Bye.
Okay, bye.
The Vocal Fries podcast is produced by Chris Ayers for Half Tone Audio. Theme music by Nick Granum. You can find us on Tumblr, Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at Vocal Fries Pod. You can email us at vocalfriespod@gmail.com.